Chapter 5. Propinquity. Propinquity. P-R-O-P-I-N-Q-U-I-T. The state of being close to someone or something. Proximity. Late Middle English. Propinquity. Via Latin. Propinquus. Near. From prop, near to. Traveling as a human is still stupid and boring, but at least this time Kurama has something to occupy his attention.
How is this red? Did you paint it?
Seated on Kurama's shoulder, one of his arms hooked over her legs to hold her in place, Naho pats at his hair, combing through the strands like she's looking for the real color hidden underneath. Kurama rolls his eyes a little where she can't see it, but answers as patiently as he's able. No, it's just like that. He does wonder, a little morbidly, why he doesn't simply look like Naruto. Even though he's grateful for it, just knowing this is Naruto's body is enough. It would be an even worse hell having to see his lost Jinchuriki staring back at him every time he looked in the mirror. Granted, he hasn't even done that much yet, regardless of it being Naruto's last suggestion, and despite having the opportunity at the end. It will feel final, Kurama thinks sadly. As grateful as he is, looking in a mirror will show him without a doubt that he's the sole occupant of this form. That there's little to nothing of Naruto left to it. The basic shape, maybe, and the blood Kurama has claimed with his last name, but everything else will be Kurama. And if the color of his skin and his hair is anything to go by, he'll look very little like his lost friend. Hound is watching them out of the corner of his eye, porcelain mask still concealing his face, but body language wary. The fact that he's walking next to them again is an improvement, though. He'd taken to the trees again the moment Naho woke up from her nap and started wanting to interact again. Kurama ignores the man as best as he can, although he's uncomfortably aware that this is indeed one of Naruto's precious people, more or less. Maybe not quite, maybe not yet, but the framework is there. Surely Naruto would want him to help, despite Kurama only having the vaguest idea how. After all, this isn't Naruto's beloved pervert teacher, porn book fixed firmly in front of his face, ready with a disarming, deceptive smile the moment anyone tries to take him seriously. This is Anbu's hound, alert but silent, with a weight of old, half-faded bleakness around him that sets Kurama's teeth on edge. He doesn't remember all that much of Hound's history, beyond the parts where it intersected with Naruto's. A bit about Anbu, a passing recollection that the brat's other sensei, Yamamoto, once served under him. Mention made of Itachi once doing the same. There's little else he can use to judge where he is in the time period, and it would definitely be suspicious to randomly ask how long ago the Kyuubi attack happened. Especially, Kurama thinks dourly, if it hasn't happened yet. Kakuzu's appearance was a clue, and at least means he's back sometime before Naruto's first Chunin exams. Hidan was a new member of Akatsuki when they started seriously hunting the Bijuu, and if he isn't there, the organization is probably still gathering power. Maybe finding Han was a coincidence, or maybe they were starting with what they considered the weakest, least protected Jinchuriki, Since Han's known more for his steam-enhanced taijutsu than any flashy ninjutsu, and most of the others are wary or locked away. Still not a concrete marker where the timeline is concerned, and Kurama's getting frustrated guessing if... Hey, hey! Naho chirps, yanking just a little too hard on Kurama's hair and making him swallow a yelp.
Are you a daddy too, Kurama?
What the hell? Kurama eyes the girl on his shoulder incredulously, but in the face of her wide-eyed enthusiasm, can't quite muster the cutting retort he'd otherwise use. With a sigh, he rolls his eyes and says flatly, "No." Her expression crumples a little, and with a wild surge of terror at the thought of more tears, Kurama blurts out, "But I have siblings." Naho's expression brightens like he flipped a switch, more than quickly enough to send a trickle of suspicion sneaking through Kurama's mind, though it's rapidly forgotten when she says,
"You do? Oh, how many? I've always wanted a little sister."
Kurama hesitates, considering, but what the hell? It's not like the Bijuu are widely known by their true names, rather than their tails. Still, probably best to avoid mention of Shukaku. The damn Tanuki has a bad habit of introducing himself, or boasting about himself by name in the middle of his rampages. And though it's unlikely Hound will make the connection, Kurama would rather not risk being ripped out of his body and sealed into another. If that would even work. He's a little curious, but definitely not enough to test it. "Well, I'd give you mine," Kurama answers dryly. "But I don't have a sister. I've got 8 brothers instead." He's wondered about that before, too. Because as far as he knows, gender is a voluntary choice for the Bijuu. But most of them use masculine pronouns or male names. Chome is the only one he'd peg as female. Or maybe neither. But given how the Nanabe talks, he's not going to make that call until he asks. For now, he'll stick with the default.
8?
Naho sounds odd. Kurama gives her a quick smile, ducking a little to keep her from whacking her head on a branch. The forest has been getting thicker as they move towards Konoha, and they've been walking through trees for at least 2 hours now. "Yeah, I'm the oldest."
By like 12 seconds, but it counts.
And Shukaku can just go suck on a lemon. They're all really silly, even though they're powerful. Matatabi likes to run up and down mountains for fun, and Saiken's always blowing bubbles. Well, his Jinchuriki is, but Kurama knows the Rokubi. Saiken is just as fond of them as his host. Besides, a little embellishment never hurt anyone, and it's not as if Naho is ever going to meet the other Bijuu. Naho giggles, finally abandoning Kurama's hair to reach up and snatch at pretty leaves.
"I bet you live in a big house," she says, stretching her arms out wide. "You'd need 8 bedrooms and a big kitchen and a big table and..."
She trails off, face scrunching a little as she clearly tries to think of everything. Kurama can't fight a faint, mostly sad smile, though he doesn't let her see it. The last time he saw all of his fellow Bijuu in one place, they were preparing to defeat Kaguya for the first time. After that, by the time they realized she'd managed to leave traces of herself scattered around the world and then come back through them, Chome and Isobu had both been devoured. Kokuo had gone into hiding, though it hadn't helped him in the long run, and all the rest had tried to stand together and fight, but had been lured out and overwhelmed instead. The only ones Kurama ever saw after that were Shukaku and Gyuki, mostly because their Jinchuriki joined Naruto in spearheading the resistance. The Ichibi and Hachibi had also joined them, if briefly, but... Kaguya had gotten to them in the end. She got to everyone in the end.
"Do they live in Konoha too?"
Naho asks, bending down to peer at his face, and Kurama tries to wipe away all the melancholy that's gathered. "No,"
he manages after a second of struggle. They live far, far away. I don't think I'm going to be able to see them again for a while. Hound casts him a sharp look that shades toward considering, and Kurama ignores it. He doesn't want to think about what he's giving away or what assumptions the Anbu might be making. It's none of his business. Besides, if he thinks too much about it, the lump in his throat, stupid, because it's not like he was ever close to the other Bijou or friends with them or anything. Even though the ones he knew are as dead as creatures of chakra can be, that lump will choke off his breath, and that's definitely an ignoble way to die. There's a pause, and then small arms wrap around the top of his head as Naho hugs the only part of him that's within easy reach. I'm sorry, Kurama, she says, and she sounds sad for him, even though she was the one who just got kidnapped by bandits and held hostage for who knows how long. I'm sure they miss you lots and lots. You're a really good big brother. He's not. He wouldn't even count himself a good friend. But she can hardly know that. Thanks, princess, he murmurs and pats her knee gently. I'm sure you'll be a great sister if you ever get the chance. She smiles at that, entirely pleased, and starts chattering about dolls and dress-up and all the things she could do with a sister. And for the sake of his own sanity, Kurama tunes most of it out, though he tries to make interested noises at the appropriate times. Hound, he notices sourly, is edging away again, as if he's about to make for the branches and hide. But Kurama is on him, the coward. The knowledge of how bad he seems to be with kids is tempered by the memory of Naruto's Genin team, while Kurama has to stifle a snicker. If ever a man deserved to get saddled with Uzumaki Naruto, Uchiha Sasuke, and Haruno Sakura all at the same time, it's him. And Kurama means that in every conceivable way. It's slightly possible he still carries a grudge for that 1,000 years of pain incident, but Kurama is definitely not telling. Kakashi has been Anbu for 6 years already. He's seen plenty of killers and even more desperate souls. There have been traitors and heroes and normal people struggling under the weight of their burdens. And with an effort, he's learned to read them all. The past leaves a mark, and Kakashi knows that better than anyone. It takes a certain kind of past, too, to make someone like himself, to create a man who can be a murderer in one instant and a friend in the next, with barely a heartbeat in between. There has to be darkness, pain, the kind of pain that you can turn on other people as easily as you can turn it on yourself, that you can swing like a sword even as you bleed crimson. An edge of viciousness, a touch of self-loathing, traces of, this is all I'm good for, so I might as well, as you watch the light fade from your victim's eyes. Burdens like that can be tempered, turned into a weapon to do what's right. But it's so terribly easy for them to fester. And when you lance the sore, the only thing that it weeps is death. Or maybe that's just him projecting. Still, he saw Kurama tear out a man's throat with his bare hands, then coo nonsense at a little girl with gore all over his skin. Kakashi is a shinobi, has been one all his life, but that was an impressive shift in priorities. Though perhaps it wasn't. After all, the men were dead before Kurama allowed himself to be anything but a killer. And Kakashi knows that mindset intimately. Were he not on a mission, he might have done the same. The work was finished, the girl was rescued, and it was all right to go back to being human instead of a weapon. Box up the monster, wipe off the blood, paste on a smile, and no one will ever know anything's happened. Kurama isn't dressed like a shinobi, but that switch alone tells Kakashi that he is one, without a doubt. There's a squeal, a cheerful shriek, and it takes effort for Kakashi not to grab for his Tonto. The other man casts him a glance that's probably meant to be amused, but doesn't quite manage it, thanks to the lines that pull tight around his eyes. Lines that say he knows exactly why Kakashi reacted as he did, and would join him if he had an ounce less pride. Even so, he tosses the little girl up in the air again, then catches her and says, "Doing okay, Naho?"
"Yep,"
the girl laughs.
"Do it again, Kurama!"
Technically, he shouldn't be here. Kakashi should have killed him the moment they came face to face, or at the very least knocked him out. He should have put the girl to sleep, then taken her and headed for Konoha as fast as he could, because this is a mission. There's no allowance for delays, especially when they take the form of mysterious strangers appearing out of nowhere. For all Kakashi knows, Kurama could be one of the bandits, or an enemy operative sent to capture the girl. But that first glimpse of him at the edge of the camp, wide, startled eyes, and then clear exasperation, didn't seem like the reaction of an enemy. Add to that the fact that he didn't understand basic shinobi signs, but caught the handful of Konoha Anbu code Kakashi threw in as a test, and then his strange ability to call up waves of force without so much as a hand sign, and it makes for a confusing picture. Kakashi hasn't forgotten Tenzo, hasn't forgotten Root, and Danzo's desire for shinobi with unique bloodlines. And if that wasn't some sort of Kekkai Genkai, Kakashi will eat his left sandal. After all, not only did he activate it without hand signs, but the redhead has claws. Small ones that look like fingernails, but even so, Kakashi saw them ripped straight through unprotected flesh, and he's not about to underestimate them. Even though Kurama isn't carrying so much as a kunai, he's got the chakra reserves and ability to justify it. The little girl is talking again, but Kakashi doesn't bother to listen. After all, that's one of the reasons he allowed Kurama to come along. Let the redhead deal with the child. Even if he turns out to be an enemy, Kakashi is confident that he can handle the man. And even if he can't, he's certain he'll be able to hold him off long enough to grab the girl and get away. Besides, listening to her chatter reminds Kakashi of Naruto, and the fact that it's been weeks since he was in the village long enough to even take a passing glance at his sensei's son. He doesn't mind the missions, but he misses being on Naruto's guard.
"Are you a shinobi like Sir Anbu?"
the girl asks, loudly enough to catch his attention, and he gives the pair a sideways glance. Naho has migrated to Kurama's hip again, looking very pleased and very curious. And the other man has his eyes fixed forward, apparently pretending that he hasn't got a 4-year-old clinging to him like he's her new favorite stuffed toy. Kakashi hides an amused snort, though judging by the faintly sour glance Kurama sends him, he didn't hide it well enough. "Not really," Kurama answers, and reaches up to tap his bare forehead. "No Hitayate, because I'm not working for any of the villages. That's how you can tell if a shinobi is your friend or not, princess." Unallied, then. It's strange, because even given just the handful of skills Kakashi has seen, Kurama would make a skilled jonin anywhere he wished to go. Some villages, especially the smaller ones, are always looking for fresh blood, and there's a certain level of prestige to the job. Yet more scraps of uncertainty to join the others, and Kakashi frowns, casting another glance at his unexpected companion. He remembers Kurama's reaction when the girl admitted to being scared, remembers the grief that showed for half a heartbeat before he shoved it away. Grief like that? Kakashi understands it all too well. Desolation, sorrow, aimless fury. "My world ended," that expression says. "I understand your fear. My world ended and I'm the only one left." Though maybe that's him projecting too.
"Like the leaf,"
the girl chirps, drawing an exaggerated swirl in the air.
The shinobi that came to get me had leaves on their headbands.
Kurama blinks at her, brows lifting faintly in surprise, and then glances up at Kakashi questioningly. Kakashi ignores the look. If Kurama is an enemy, he'll already know the girl's circumstances. If he isn't, there's no need to tell him. Mouth tightening with clear aggravation, Kurama drops his eyes back to his passenger and manages a faint smile. Kakashi wonders if the girl can see how awkward it is, if that's the reason she's asking distracting questions and rambling. It wouldn't be a surprise, given her mother's identity. Geisha are brilliant at that kind of thing.
Yeah, Kurama allows, boosting her up a little higher on his side.
Kakashi estimates just how long he's been carrying her without a break and adds above average strength to the growing list of abilities.
A leaf means Konohagakure. They're the ones your dad hired, so you can trust them. There's a lot of good people in Konoha.
That's a very broad statement for an unaffiliated shinobi to make. Kakashi lifts a curious brow, half wishing he could ditch the mask, pull out his Icha Icha, and use that to cover his sideways glances. Anbu masks are hell on peripheral vision, and he's definitely wary of this stranger. Wary and interested, because bits keep showing through, between his skills and his knowledge and his name, and surely any cover story worth using wouldn't leave quite that many questions behind. From there, the logical belief would be that it's not a cover, but Kakashi has been a shinobi too long to simply let himself believe that. The name alone is jarring. Kakashi isn't certain that his heart has entirely recovered yet from hearing it fall so unexpectedly from the man's lips. This man especially, he thinks, casting Kurama another sideways glance. Because the blood-red hair aside, Kakashi would have mistaken him for a Kumo native. He has the same dark skin, although deep red eyes are more usual. It's not like villages have never intermarried, but there aren't supposed to be many Uzumaki left to intermarry with. Uzushiogakure is 25 years destroyed now, and thanks to scavengers, has been almost completely stripped of all traces of what it was. The ruins are most likely rubble and bones, and the village's few remaining people are scattered. Uzushio was always a small village, hardly a fraction of Konoha's size, and the Uzumaki clan made up the bulk of its shinobi. When the village fell, so did they. Maybe one or two survived, lost in other countries, but to meet one is entirely unexpected. Too convenient as well, given who Kakashi is and who trained him. Given that, had things turned out differently, he might as well be an older brother to the Kyuubi Jinchuriki, given who lives in the village they're headed for. Kurama's indignation when he suggested knocking the girl out was genuine. Kakashi could see it on his face, read it in his eyes, clear as day. The redhead isn't practicing hiding his emotions, or he just doesn't care to. Like with Kushina, everything he feels is reflected on his face, and Kakashi is skilled enough at reading people to know that it isn't faked. It's too awkward, too quick a reaction. The truth behind it is painfully obvious, and yet, maybe it isn't a front, but it's certainly an odd coincidence. Kakashi has long since stopped believing in coincidences. So, Kurama's knowledge of Konoha's specific Anbu code, his presence here on Kakashi's mission, his odd ability, those all say root, or Danzo at the very least. On the other hand, his hair, his emotional nature, and his chakra reserves say stray Uzumaki. To be honest, that fits better than the root theory. Danzo takes care to stamp every bit of sentimentality out of his operatives, and Kurama's reaction to the girl has been nothing but sentimentality. It's possible that Kurama is exactly who he says he is, even if it's not exactly likely. After all, he looks at least 10 years older than Kakashi, or maybe a little more. That would put him at around Minato's age, and 10 when Uzushio fell. Given the friendship between Uzushio and Konoha, it's conceivable that he learned Anbu signs there. It would also fit the claim that he's not exactly a shinobi. The loss of his village meaning he was never promoted, and his claim that Konoha is full of good people. Surely only an ally would say something like that. And they live far, far away. I don't think I'm going to be able to see them again for a while. Kakashi knows loss when he hears it, and that was clear. A whole family, 9 brothers, dead or so thoroughly scattered that there's little hope of reuniting. That certainly sounds like the aftermath of Uzushio's destruction. Of course, this is all speculation. Kakashi could be wildly off the mark and leading himself further astray with every conclusion. It makes sense, though, and while it doesn't quite quell Kakashi's suspicion, well, it gives him an excuse for dragging the man along with him that the Sandaime will buy beyond, but small crying child, ew! 60-40 odds, Kakashi thinks, somewhere between morbid and reluctantly amused, that Sarutobi accepts it without booting him out the window. If, of course, Kurama doesn't turn out to actually be an enemy and try to slit his throat sometime in the night. You said Konoha was about a day and a half? Kurama asks suddenly, making Kakashi glance over. The girl is sacked out on his shoulder again, drooling a little, with one small hand fisted in black cloth. Ostensibly, Kakashi should find the image cute. As it is, he's just glad she isn't drooling on him. About, he confirms after a moment. They've been walking the entire day, but given the child, it's an easy, practically boring pace. On his own, Kakashi could have been at the village hours ago. Kurama huffs a little, mutters something that sounds close to, like pulling goddamn teeth, and then raises his voice to add, "You good to keep walking?" Kakashi calculates the distance. If they don't make camp, which honestly sits better with him than leaving himself vulnerable to an unknown shinobi for hours at a stretch, they can make it back to Konoha by midnight or a little after. Inconvenient timing, but Kakashi doesn't think the Sandaime will be too put out to be dragged out of bed then. He was the one to assign Kakashi this mission and make it an A rank despite the lack of real danger. Though, Kakashi supposes, that's more or less required when Fire Country's Daimyo asks you to take care of something personally. Sure, he agrees, then stiffens as an unpleasant thought occurs to him and casts Kurama a wary sideways glance. Apparently able to read his trepidation clearly despite the mask, Kurama blows out a short, aggrieved sigh, rolls his eyes, and says with exasperation, "Get that look off your face, hound. I'm good to carry her so you can stop looking like you're about to wet your pants at the thought of us trading." "Ma," Kakashi protests, a little of the Anbu composure he tries to keep finally slipping in the face of this grave offense. "I'm concerned about her comfort. She looks so much happier with you, that's all." "I'm sure," Kurama says dryly, entirely skeptical, but he doesn't attempt to call him on it. Instead, he simply shifts Naho a little higher on his shoulder and picks up his pace. There's another faint mutter, more incomprehensible than the last one, and Kakashi glances at him curiously, despite the fact that Kurama doesn't seem inclined to clarify. "You like children, then?" Kakashi finally offers, a poor attempt to break the silence, but all he can really think of. It earns him another soft snort, and Kurama looks away. "No," he says flatly. "They all turn into snot-nosed whiners eventually, but she's been through a lot. Figure I can put up with her clinging to me for a bit if that can make it better." "Kind," Kakashi thinks without meaning to, turning his own gaze to the path ahead. That's probably a mark in the not root column then. He remembers Kushina's kindness was much the same way, given offhand and with much indignation when anyone called her on it, but always there nevertheless. Maybe Kurama really is an Uzumaki. Maybe he really is who he says he is. Kakashi thinks of Naruto, lonely outcast in a village that should love him, and feels a faint tremor of foreboding slip down his spine. If that's Kurama's aim, if getting close to Naruto is his goal, if he wants that just to have influence over the Kyuubi Jinchuriki, Kakashi will gut him without hesitation or regret. Naruto might never know who Kakashi is, might never understand what they could have been, but he's Minato and Kushina's son. He's family. Kakashi will be dead and buried before he ever abandons his family again.